We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, Friday back again. It keeps knocking up against us. Quick as we can break free, it's back. And that's good news for us because Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine, he joins us first hour. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, Todd. And how are you, my friend?
I am rocking and rolling and a happy guy.
Yeah, that nice music comes on. It's like, you know, we want to have a dance party here. Don't you wish we had a studio audience and we could play songs and have people dance?
No, I wouldn't want it. I like my privacy.
No?
I like that about radio. It's such a private medium, you know? It's just us sitting here with our little microphones in our little rooms and our internet connection that carries our voices.
It does. It's brain-to-brain communication. And there's a tremendous difference in how the messages enter people's consciousness through radio than any other medium. It's amazing. It's a remarkable, remarkable medium. And I hope that generations to come have the opportunity to enjoy radio the way our generation and, you know, just about everybody listening to this broadcast right now. I mean, people who are listening to the radio right now are radio listeners because there's so many things that people can be doing. And I feel very dedicated to the people who love radio in 2020. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know exactly. I want to press you on this a little bit because yesterday I was preempted, as sometimes happens, by a Red Sox game for the first, say, hour and 20 minutes of the show. They were finishing up. Then they finish I Take Over, and I always hear from people saying, what the hell am I? I'm hearing these bozos talk about sports because we're not allowed to carry the stream of the Red Sox broadcast on our stream. We have to something else. So we run some ESPN feed or something with guys talking sports. And for the average listener tuning in, a lot of people with AM radio now, well, FM radio too, whatever. I mean, you go to listen to the radio and you can just tell your smart speaker to put it on. And that's easier than tuning into a radio. So it depends on what you mean by radio. Is listening to a podcast radio? Is listening to a stream of a radio station listening to radio? Where do you divide that up?
Well, that is a major question. That's a very heavy question, you know, that we all wrestle with. It's like somebody said to me just earlier today, why do you call it Talkers Magazine? You haven't printed a magazine, you know, a paper magazine in 7 years. Why do you still call it a magazine? And I said to him, because I was being interviewed, I said to the host who asked me that question, I said, well, why do you call this a radio show? I'll bet you most of the people listening are not listening on radios.
You got him.
Well, I don't think he was, you know, trying to put me in a corner. I think he was just like you just asked a very legitimate question. And, you know, it's sort of a conundrum because it has to do with form and content. As long as the spirit of what we're doing, because I think most people are not listening to us on radios. I think most people listening to us on the internet, even this whole, you know, Alexa, that's internet. Once it's digital, it's not on AM or FM. I don't think it's about AM or FM. I think it's about coming to you with a certain spirit that rooted in the 20th century, 100 years. I mean, we have 20 years mm-hmm. now in this century, and we had 80 years in the previous century of this medium called radio. And there was once a time when FM was not considered real radio. It was only AM, and then there was this FM thing. And then, of course, the word radio could be anything. You know, a taxi dispatcher does it by radio. But so this art form that's half entertainment, half news and journalism, half conveying events such as baseball games and things of that nature, part of a stable of programs that have a certain commonality, which is called the station. I mean, it's hard to explain what it is, but we know what it is.
and it's like pornography.
What was that? Like what?
Like pornography. You know, that court ruling, the Supreme Court ruling.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. I don't know what it is, but I know what it is when I see it.
But that's what's interesting about radio is because a big part of radio for me as a kid, and I'm sure you too, it was tuning into those stations that would come in from, you know, a city 700 or 800 miles away, and you'd be listening to the ball game and the voices you didn't know, and there was some aura of that sound coming. It wasn't just the voices; it was that whole, to me, radio. Listening to the radio in the middle of the night on an old AM receiver was like picking up one of those shells at the beach and you put it up to your ear and it makes it bigger. There's a volume to the space that is created by that aura of the sound. I don't know how to say it any better.
No, you're saying it very well. As a matter of fact, just to digress, you know, we put the shells to our ears. I don't know if kids still do that, but the meme, that certainly wasn't a word back in mm-hmm. those days, but the meme is that if you put your ear to the shell, you actually can hear the ocean. Oh,
yes.
You know, I don't know whether kids today even care about stuff like that.
But that's a mystery. You just defined a mystery. And I think that's what is exciting about radio, that it opens up a sense of wonder in us.
Yes. Yes. And I think, and that's what I mean by I'm dedicated to the people that listen to radio, because they're dedicated to radio. And because I radio is not the only thing I think about in my life. OK, I have a lot of interests, but I have a love for radio. I have a love for theater, too. And it pains me that theater is going through such a terrible time that can threaten its existence for years. So the basic point is these platforms, whether it's theater, whether it's radio, whether it's newspapers, whether it's movie theaters, platforms, institutions, these things are not written in stone. They're manifestations of a time and a place and the way the culture was at that time and place. It's not written in stone. There was once a thing called vaudeville, you know, and there were people who could not imagine how could entertainment exist without vaudeville. And people would develop acts, and a family would have an act, and they would stand on each other's shoulders, or they would dance, or they would sing. And play town to town. It was a culture. Here's one for you. Look at what's happened to that thing when we grew up. It was a part of life. It was so big it played in Madison Square Garden. The circus. Now you got, you know, Cirque du Soleil. It's kind of a weird dance thing, and it's kind of high tech. But the circus with the elephants and the clowns. And now clowns are considered creepy. Elephants are considered victims. Circuses are considered stinky. You know, these things are not written in stone. So
yes, but you're skipping over the radio thing, because that's why I'm curious about, does radio continue to exist with all spoken word programming, no matter what platform it's communicated on? Or is radio this unique thing that has to do with a broadcast signal being captured out of the air by a listening device?
To a great extent, that's the case, and it has that magical platform. And I think its greatest challenge in the early days of the 21st century, rather, is to maintain the magic that it had when it was magically through the air to a unique platform called the radio appliance. And it was, every station had a different level of signal. Every station had a listening area. Every station sounded different technically and even physically. Yeah, that was magic. And it's very difficult today for radio to maintain that position while being in the democratized medium of the internet. where
yes, but why does it matter? We get attached to the concepts when, in fact, we live in a period now where that democratization, the fact that anybody really can make a podcast and be essentially a radio host.
Bingo.
What's the difference? It's now expanding and becoming more ubiquitous. And I think there's a magic that also belongs simply to having a voice coming into your ears. Most people are listening on earbuds now, whatever the origination point of the broadcast, and there's something powerful about having the voice alone disassociated from a visual.
Well, when you do a Zoom meeting, do you feel that you're on television?
When you Skype with somebody,
does it have the magic of watching something on CBS TV?
I find Zoom meetings very exciting. I love it. I love that I can just be sitting there chatting with people, looking at them, and I didn't even have to leave the house. I love that.
Yeah, but that's now you're talking about a utilitarian convenience. Well, what we were talking about before is magic. I'm sorry, we were both talking. What'd you say?
I said I still got a little silly over it. I enjoy my Zoom, but go ahead, because I think the statement you're making is important.
What I'm saying is that, you know, the movies on the silver screen, stars from Hollywood, MGM, they worked in the studios. Their fans read about them in fan magazines. The studios controlled their images. They were larger than life. They lived in a fantasy land called Hollywood. Most people dreamed of it. They thought of it as separate. They thought of it as special. They would go and they would sit in the darkened theater and they'd watch larger than life, you know, figures on the screen. We still have movies, but movies are struggling to survive. And COVID has stuck another dagger in its back, you know. But that was magical. Is it the same thing as somebody making a little documentary of their trip to the park? Or everybody has a smartphone and it has a video component and people have platforms, they can have thousands of followers. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's not the same thing.
But it's not the same thing.
If you're taking a movie that was made on a smartphone and put it on the big screen, the magic can be there. The magic is in the big screen. That's the analogy, I think, to radio.
Do you think so?
There's something, yeah, sitting there in that darkened space in that luxurious seat and trying to keep yourself awake while you watch the action go by.
Now we have presidential town meetings and drive-in theaters. I mean, you talk about the timeline of evolution, technological, sociological evolution being knocked on its ear. We're living in that. Now it's all just fun. I don't like to overly categorize things. I like to mildly categorize them, leaving a little bit of wiggle room so that you can have an escape, you know, plan, so things can grow. When you overly categorize something, and this is what it is, this is what country music is, and this is what rock music is, and this is what a Democrat is, and this is what a Republican is, and this is what a Ford is, and this is what a Chevy is, you don't leave any room for evolution and for wiggle room, and formats should be broken. I'm a great believer in that
yes,
things should be slightly defined, but not overly defined or overly categorized. Just my way of dealing with things.
Well, the categorization is there to be an assist, not to bind you in. It's not to lock you in place and say you can't do anything different. That's ridiculous.
But how many people and how many institutions and how many companies and how many art forms and
all
many,
of them.
They do what I'm saying. They lock themselves
yes
in.
All of them.
We
yes,
don't do that
ridiculous
here, you know. That's I used to deal with that when I was programming music. We can't play that. Why not? We don't play it on this format. Well, what'll happen? Our listeners will get angry. Will they? You know,
that's not rock and roll, is it?
Right. That's not rock and roll. Hey, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame goes through that every year, that they try to keep having an excuse for putting second rate talent in, since most people who knew how to play rock and roll are dead. And people say that's not rock and roll. And they're right. As a matter of fact, nothing has ever really been rock and roll. You know, try defining rock and roll to somebody who's never heard
right
it.
That before we get off on that tangent, which is a wonderful one, we've got to take a quick break. Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine. More coming your way on WTIC. Yeah, it's WTIC. Michael Harrison and me. We have these fun sessions together, and we even plan sometimes and spec out some ideas for what we're going to talk about. And on the best of the hours, I think, Michael, we don't go anywhere near our list of things.
I know, but it's very difficult for us to say what's the best and what isn't. How do we know?
Well, we know best.
I mean, one of the very, very interesting things about communications and the arts is that sometimes people think that the work that they do is their best, and sometimes they think the work that they're doing is their worst, and oftentimes success comes to the thing that they think is not good, and the thing that they think is good goes unappreciated. We don't always know. We, meaning, no, you know, true. The generic we don't always know if what we're doing is good or working. And I'll tell you something about radio, and that's another thing that I think is interesting, and you can attest to this, is that unlike most performers who get to work with their audience, or even if people are making films, there's crew around them, there's directors, there are people. Most radio broadcasters, in traditional radio as we do it, operate in an isolated situation and don't see the faces or hear the reaction of their audience, and for the most part don't know how well it's going, other than maybe if their sponsors are happy, or if the ratings show that they have what's called good metrics, good numbers. But they, you know, you walk out and you don't really know whether you touched anybody or whether it worked, and that takes a certain kind of backbone.
That may be part of the beauty of radio, is there is that lack of that. Well, something about when you're talking in front of people and you're hearing their immediate response, and then you can build a certain momentum with them. Like a comedian can walk on the stage, a guy with a reputation, say, and people are in such a good mood about the fact that he's standing on the stage in front of them, that they think he's hysterical, even if he didn't even tell a joke. If he just read something tedious from a book, they'd be laughing at his sniffling or his brushing of his hair. There's a mood you put people in, and there's a momentum you build when you're in person with them that you can measure. And then you're playing against that. And in a sense, you become a whore to the reaction of the crowd, rather than doing what you would do on the radio, which is to... I don't know. It's different in some way because you don't have that immediate feedback.
Exactly. Well, stand-up comedy is for masochists. It's people that go into stand-up comedy to get to that point where you could be like Bob Hope or Seinfeld or where you're an institution, you're iconic, and they play your theme song and you come out and the people are just mesmerized by the fact that you're there. Or Johnny Carson, who, when he would have things go wrong, he would just look and have this face, and people would laugh more at the mistake and the gaffe than they did if it went well.
Yes.
They never can bomb.
That's all Carson had to do, was make a face.
Right, right, exactly. That's the highest level of stand-up comedy. But most stand-up comics go out are terrified when they start, because the audiences for unknown comedians basically are saying, Okay, wise guy, you think you're better than us by being up there on the stage and we're sitting down here in the nightclub? Make me laugh. Let me see you be funny. And then you have hecklers.
Make my day, punk.
Yeah, then you have hecklers. Like, for example, you were talking the other day about the governor being heckled. I think I caught some of that.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't catch everything, but he didn't react very well.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Give me a chance to speak, Dad. I don't think it's time to give you one.
Can we just talk in a few minutes? No need. Let me just talk to these people right now. I'm happy to have a conversation.
You had the chance to talk to me before you went up there. You could have called me back yesterday. You could have called me back three times. I've emailed you.
Give me 3 minutes and I'm happy to have this conversation. Let me just say something to the great people of Berlin.
We need to reopen Connecticut. We slowed the spread.
Is there a prescription for that? What you do? I remember Martin Mull, who was an actor and a comedian. He did comedy, and I remember he had a comedy album, and there was a bit on it about being heckled, and he said. He said to one of the guys in the audience who was heckling him, "Oh yeah, I remember my first beer too." A little put down. That wasn't very funny. But that you can't do that when you're the governor. And I don't know what you're supposed to do. Let's talk about that when we continue. It's Michael Harrison with us from Talkers Magazine. We get together and do this first hour every week on WTIC on Fridays. And we will continue after news on WTIC. WTIC Friday with Michael Harrison. So I want to play just one other little clip here of Ned being harassed, and then see, Michael, if you have any advice, because I don't know what I would do if I was in this situation.
Oh, fascinating.
And I understood what that meant.
You gotta open it up.
What that meant is this is about opening up Connecticut. This is just what we're trying to do. This is about economic development.
My 3-year-old doesn't need a medical exemption to go to school without a mask. But she belongs in school, man.
Well, anyway, I think I'll just take this short, but I want to thank Senator Bizarro. I want to thank Speaker.
That is a tough situation to be in. What do you think, Michael?
It is a tough situation, and it's a sign of the times. Now, politicians, just like stand-up comics, have always had to deal with hecklers. As a matter of fact, a very interesting thing that they do in England is they have the Prime Minister meet with the House of Commons, I think, once a month, and they call
yes.
it Prime Minister time, and it's raucous. I used to love to watch Margaret Thatcher hold her own against these absolutely unruly members of the House of Commons, members of Parliament, MPs. And they would, and they all were very, very, you know, polite. My esteemed friend from, you know, Westboro, you are like a horse's arse, you know, that type, that type of thing. They were very pompous about how they insulted each other. But the answer to the question is that Ned Lamont is going to have to do some practicing. He's going to have an answer. When you mentioned Martin Ball in this segment before the news, that mm-hmm. he came back with, you know, hey, I remember my first beer, you know, and put the guy right down. Believe me, he didn't think of that at that moment. That was part of his
yes.
arsenal. And you've got to have, it's like boxers. A good boxer will follow a jab with a right and then a jab and then move. That these are called combinations. And you have to have the combination already set for almost any possible heckling situation.
Yeah, but it seems like you're at an advantage as a comedian because really people are looking to laugh. They might want to give you a hard time. But if you can pivot that hard time into a funny moment and everyone's laughing, then you've won. And I don't know how a politician gets a victory out of that kind of adversarial relationship.
You lean over to the microphone, you look at the heckler, and you say, "Sir, the situation is as follows, blah, 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 blah." And you give mm-hmm. him an honest answer explaining not only what your position is, but why it is inappropriate to continue that discussion in this forum because he's taking time away from its purpose and from the other people. Then if he starts to continue to be demanding that he have the floor, you will have the entire room on your side. Unless you're in a situation where the entire crowd is hostile, at which you should know up front, don't go there. Don't go there.
That's a good point. Yes, and you know, you were talking about the parliamentary experience where for the Prime Minister where they have this. The Prime Minister is going to meet the people effectively because
right.
he or she is stepping into the zone where their representatives are. But it's a fair fight because there's the Prime Minister's people are there. They're mm-hmm. his supporters, people on his side. And it's a screaming match, but it's roughly 50-50. So it's a fair fight. But this was not a fair fight for Jolly Ned. So it was a curious situation, but very gratifying to hear him get roasted from my perspective.
You didn't feel any pity for him or any kind of empathy?
No, because as I said in my promo today, which I cut up little pieces of this, I feel that this is what he does to us. He is heckling us when he plays games with the truth and uses cute language to avoid responsibility for what he's actually saying. And, you know, the people are being gaslit on a lot of these policies, and it bothers me. So,
it's
no,
a
I've
fascinating
got enough hostility.
Process. It's fascinating.
It is.
Very, very
it's
interesting.
Totally.
Well, these are the things that these are the questions and these are the problems and these are the issues that we deal with in human communication. This is what society is based on. If there were easy answers for all these things, we'd be living in a very rigid society. I mean, you know, if I were Joseph Stalin, I'd say, well, that heckler should have been taken out and put in jail.
Yeah, well, that's what they did the next day. The next day he came with cops and he sent big burly
oh, really?
People out there to run interference. Yes.
Well.
Yeah, but they still, you know, they... You're being watched, so you got to be careful what you do, and you have to follow the law sometimes when you're a police officer in that situation. So it's complicated, but it's wonderful. I have one other piece of sound I want to, because this stunned me this morning. And I'm one of the things that really bothers me that politicians work in a duality of they tell us things to keep us out of the know so that they can maintain the game that they're playing without interference from us. They hide information. They use cute language to make sure we don't understand. That's one of my pet peeves. My other big pet peeve is journalists who don't do journalism, and especially when they think there's some nobility about the way they're not doing journalism. They think they're hyper-generalizing. Now, just listen to this and have a laugh. This is the podcast from National Public Radio this morning.
President Trump falsely claims American school children learn too much about racism.
He falsely claimed that school children learn too much about racism. How could that be false? In what universe could an opinion
be
false?
That's so blatantly biased.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That is so biased. That is such a blatant example of what Trump supporters complain about. And that's a case where it's true. The president has falsely claimed, and then he gave an opinion.
Yes.
He gave an opinion of a subjective situation.
But they do this all the time. So that's horrible, but they do it all the time with stuff that is political speak, right? Politicians say things that are blustery. It doesn't mean you're lying. It means you're puffing.
We're caught, but we, and you and I really are not as much a we because we're in the media. But nowadays, everybody's in the media and everybody's in politics. So we are caught between a rock and a hard place, between journalism, where we're being messed with, and the media, and politicians who've always been that way. I mean, the thing about politicians that I find maddening is when a journalist asks a question and they answer a different question where they don't even begin to answer it. They just say what they want to say. And then
they
see the look on the face of the journalist and you're saying, oh, boy, well, I know what they're thinking. I'm saying, oh, my gosh, they're just sitting there. and there's a point past which you can't do a third or a fourth or a fifth follow up when you're dealing with the president or the governor. And you don't want to lose access either. You don't want them saying, don't let that guy in my press conference. Or the White House press corps, that's a dance that's crazy. Because you can't get in there if the president really doesn't like you. You know, the fellow from CNN that's got this ongoing feud with the president. I think on a certain Jim Ark, whatever his name is. I think that
that works well for him. It's like a co-promotion thing with him.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. I think they play off each other. I think it's a routine.
Absolutely.
Probably
it works well for both
secret
of their
place
careers.
And drinks together.
No, it's true. But I feel like this shift has gone on, Michael, where we are now the journalists, because the people, even the elite journalists in public radio aren't doing journalism anymore. And I don't even think they're aware. I think they're so off the deep end in their bias that they don't understand how laughable their attempts at journalism can be. And this goes on. There's a story in this same podcast where it's like they're in another world because they're so locked into their narrative. And I feel that we give people a shot at understanding both sides of things because we're coming at it from the side that isn't represented by these outlets that all seem to be coming from the direction of that clip.
Yeah, well, my view of it is a little bit different than yours. My view is that there is no journalism anymore. There's just, you know, fighting for clicks and fighting for audience.
Yes.
And I call it the daily dance of affirmation, that people tend to go for information from those that they feel are talking to them with what they already believe, and they get affirmed. And the people in the media play to the core. They play to the audience very much the way Trump plays to his base. And everybody's playing to their base. And not everybody is sincere because not everybody believes what they're saying, but they believe that the audience or the target or the voters or whoever it is that they're targeting, the key word is targeting, wants that, and they pander to it. We become a culture of toadies, people that just, you know, are very insincerely playing to what they think is expected of them.
Well, I think there's a lot of that going on, but I have trouble imagining these public radio people feeling that they're floating on some kind of halo.
Well, that's their shtick.
Don't think they believe it?
No, I don't. I think that when people get involved in that type of a competitive, hard-fought career in the media, they're doing what it takes to keep their job and grow their job. They're not getting up in the morning to save the world. I don't think there's no difference between the way public radio, whatever that is, because there's many companies, you know, NPR is basically a company, and they have affiliates, and they're a production company, and they have a news department. They're just like ABC or NBC or any, that's what they are.
Sure.
Only their shtick is that they're public radio, and they have commercials, they call them grants. And instead of having a guy come on, yeah, the problem, they all talk like this. But it's all shtick. It's shtick, man. It isn't sincere. It's contrived.
But why are those two things necessarily linked? NPR, you have to go on. If you're going to broadcast with them or one of their local affiliates, you have to have that kind of demeanor where you're the verbalization of wallpaper, where you're not going to wake anybody up or disturb anybody from their work, because people put it on and work all day with NPR on in the background. But that doesn't mean that inside of that, the context of those formatics, that you're not still doing something that you believe in or that you're advocating for or whatever.
Well, I tend to think that we bend our morals and our principles, and we rationalize our own consciences to ourselves. I don't mean me. I don't mean you. I don't mean anyone listening. I mean generally human beings at this point in history, to be able to fulfill the mission of the company, to keep the job, to keep the position, and fulfill the mission, not to necessarily.
Well, there's a lot of that going on. There's no doubt.
Yeah, that's what I believe. And I think a lot of people don't even know they're doing it.
President Trump falsely claims American school children learn too much about racism.
Now that's comedy.
Yeah. President Trump falsely wrongly claims. There's a difference between lying and being wrong.
He's presenting a falsehood.
Huh?
I was just reiterating, he was presenting a falsehood. Hang on, Michael. Time for a quick break. Michael Harrison is here. We continue in just a moment on WTIC. WTIC, Michael Harrison is here.
Here I am.
And we appreciate it, Michael.
So what do you want to talk about today?
I don't know. Is there anything to talk about?
Not really. There's nothing going on. It's been a very slow news year.
It's a little concerning. You wonder about the future of talk radio, if there will be something for us to...
We're going to run out of things to talk about. You know, what are we going to do when the COVID is over? And for those listening going, what's he talking about? I'm jesting. I've been following talk radio for many, many decades. And I'm always asked that question by reporters. So when the Persian Gulf War is over, what are you guys going to have left to talk about? When the O.J. Simpson trial is done, what are you guys going to talk about?
Yeah.
And that's one of the beautiful things about talk radio, is we will never run out of things to talk about, because our material...
But there are...
Yeah.
Yeah, there are periods of time where sometimes you have to work, like, to find a really good story that strikes a chord. And now it's more like a filtering process of the 30 things that are crying out to be talked about today, which ones are most compelling. It's a way more fun way to approach the format.
It's very challenging. It's extremely challenging. And challenge is good. But you're absolutely right. It's as opposed to, like, what are we going to talk about today, is, oh my gosh, what can we afford not to talk about today? You know?
Yeah.
And that's and that into itself is a topic, you know, just the very media, the very nature of communications. We live in an era defined by communications. The changes that we're going through are defined by the technology and the communications that we are going through as communicative creatures. I mean, that's what humans are. We're very communicative. We're communal. We're just not communists, but, you know, commune, it's all related. We are a social animal. We're a pack animal who loves to be left alone. That's the irony. On one level, we just love to be individual. We're like, yeah, we're individualists. But boy, don't leave us alone for too long without some of those other individualists. We like to be nonconformists, so we all dress in the same nonconformist outfits. Oh, we're really a piece of work,
together.
I got to tell you. We're something.
No, it's true. Humans are fascinating. The world, I think, would run a lot better without us. We tend to create the problems. I was I had one thing I wrote down that I wanted to mention to you today, and that was I was crunching some numbers on COVID deaths in the state of Connecticut. Out of 4,488 deaths, 269 are people under the age of 60. I just think that's fascinating. When you think about our policy, how the policy of the country has been to respond to it in a singular way. We've got to stop the virus. Everybody wear a mask, lock down. What's your thought on that?
My thought is that you're wrong, but this is a terrible time to start a debate. I think that every life and every death is important, and I think that because we are families, we have children and we have old people, and they are living in the same world. And I think we have to protect our children, and we have to protect our old people, and we have to protect the people in between. And I don't think you can cordon off society demographically when it comes to a bacteria or a disease.
Virus.
A virus, rather. Yeah. So that's all. I
no,
think
that was perfect time for a... We had plenty of time for a debate there. we've just used it all up.
Yeah.
But it was good to get your opinion on it. I love those numbers. I'm studying them all the time, trying to figure out what makes sense.
Well,
so I appreciate you piping in.
It's hard to wrap the brain around things that have to do with life and death and then trying to be pragmatic about it. Who wants to be in the position of choosing who lives and who dies? They say that's basically
Michael Harrison.
God's business. I don't want any part of that.
Thank you, sir. We'll see you next week. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks,
and you've got your show tomorrow, 2 o'clock on WTIC, the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Correct.
Don't forget to do it, okay?
Thanks. Be well.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.